I appreciate seeing all of you here in the audience. I know that you would have no other place to be than here. This is where you want to be. This is where you chose to be. But it also takes effort, right? I mean, if you have young children, if you live far away, there's a lot of effort put in. And it's definitely appreciated and helpful for all of us to join every Sabbath. We're going to start today in Hebrews 3:13. So my introductory comments, I was trying to make those intentionally and purposefully, because we'll see how those maybe tie into the subject that I'm going to cover today. So Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13, we'll begin here. This says, "But encourage one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." So this is the subject I want to cover today, encouragement. Do you ever consider how much power you have as a person? Now, you may think power in terms of muscle and strength or something like that, but I'm talking about power that we have with our words. Do you ever consider the opportunities that you have? You have opportunities in life every day. Do you ever reflect back on maybe some of the missed opportunities that you had to help somebody, where you could have encouraged somebody, but you didn't? And do you ever use that memory, as we learned about, we are learning to use our memories to help us get better. Do you, in that reflection, do you then look ahead and say, you know, these opportunities are probably going to come up again. Am I going to take advantage of this opportunity to be encouraging to someone? So as we go through this message today, one of the things I'm going to cover a very important question I know that you've all had on your minds. Are you a sledgehammer or are you mortar? We're going to get to that. Mostly, most speakers, I'll be using the New King James Version translation. But in a few places, I want to reference some other translations. Don't worry, this isn't to try to prove some doctrinal view, but I think these other translations can help give more depth of understanding to the verses that we're going to look at. Well, there is one place where the different translation might lead, not to doctrine, definitely not that, but it might actually help give some guidelines or even rules on how long a sermon should be. I think as speakers will take note of that. I think listeners will take note of that. So we're going to cover that as we go through. But let's begin in Proverbs. So we're going to think about encouragement. And, of course, one place we want to go to gather wisdom, to have our foundation of any topics, Proverbs is a great place to go. So we'll read a few Proverbs here. And we'll start in Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 18. If you want to turn to Proverbs 12 and verse 18, we'll begin there. Here it says, "There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health." The New Living Translation puts it this way: "Some people make cutting remarks, but the words of the wise bring healing." What a wonderful verse this is. How many people make a living with cutting remarks? There's so many comedians that are earning probably millions of dollars with their cutting remarks. But what do the wise people do? What are the wise people doing with their words? They're bringing healing. This is about our opportunities and the power that we have. Let's drop down a few verses and look at verse 25, Proverbs 12, verse 25. Proverbs 12, 25 says, "And anxiety in the heart of a man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad." Again, the New Living Translation, I'll refer to that. Worry weighs a person down. An encouraging word cheers a person up. So here, we can see that with our words, we can bring a person down, we can cause anxiety, we can cause depression, but what we can do, and if we're a wise person, as the previous verse said, we can encourage somebody and cheer a person up. This is what we can do. These are the opportunities that we have. These are the power. This is the power that I'm talking about, the power that we have. One more verse here in Proverbs that we'll get to is, if you want to turn to this now, is Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 11. Proverbs 25, verse 11. This is an interesting verse. I'm not sure how many of you think you'll all find that it's very familiar. I'm not quite sure what to make of this verse exactly. I'm not sure in my mind exactly what vision I should take away from this verse, but I know it's very good. It's very positive. So Proverbs 25:11 said, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver." So have you ever thought about that verse? What does it mean by apples of gold in settings of silver? I'm not quite sure what that vision means to me. Maybe some of you have a good idea what that is. But a beautiful apple, have you seen that? What a nice thing that is. And we know gold and silver are beautiful, very precious, very important. And that combination is how our words can be if we speak them in a fitting way. When I was preparing this message, like I typically do, is I will go to Life, Hope, and Truth website to try to gather some information. I use that because there's a lot of good material there, and I trust it. So I will see what articles can help me as I'm doing my preparation. And I came across a couple that are applicable to this message that I used and that helped me. One of them was written more than 10 years ago. It was written by the title of the article that you can find is "Gifts of Encouragement: Silver Boxes," and it was written by a lady named Ella May Tricolo. I apologize for probably mispronouncing her name. At least at the time of this article was written, she was a member in the Houston South Church. In her article, again, the article is "Gifts of Encouragement: Silver Boxes." She referred to a book. It's called "Silver Boxes: The Gift of Encouragement." It interests me enough and it was easy enough these days to buy a book from Amazon, you know, kind of one or two clicks, and the next day the book shows up. So I ordered the book and I got it, and I've been reading through it. I haven't finished the whole book, but it's an interesting book. Overall, I would say I don't really prefer the book, but there's a few nuggets in the book that we'll cover that I think are valuable. But the beginning point, the foundation of her book is, she uses the verse Ephesians 4:29. Ephesians 4:29 talks about how we should be, our words need to be edifying. And within this woman's family, her husband and three children, they had this question they could ask each other in order to help make sure that their language, their dialogue between each other was edifying. If somebody said something that maybe didn't come out quite right, or at least the other person didn't think it was quite right, that person could ask the other, "Is that edifying?" So they could have a dialogue to make sure that their conversations were always, always edifying. And from there, this woman was teaching a group of children, and she was talking about Ephesians 4:29. She was talking about this edification, and the conversation turned into encouragement. And at one point, a little girl stood up and said, "You know, our words should be gifts to each other, little silver boxes with bows on top." And from that, this woman took that and gave many, many seminars based on that saying and wrote this book. So I want to share a couple things out of this book that I thought were interesting and demonstrates the power that we have, and it describes what we should be doing maybe and what we shouldn't be doing. So let me go through a few examples here. Her fifth grade music teacher told Laura Lee she didn't like her laugh. Laura Lee looks back today at the power those words had on a little 11-year-old girl. She remembers, "I didn't laugh out loud again until I was 15. Another example. When Rod was 9 years old, he wanted to do something to help out his family's financial situation. He was so proud of himself to have gone out on his own and gotten a paper route. He bounded into his house to share the good fortune with his family. His excitement, though, quickly faded because he got comments like this: "Do you realize how much time this is going to take? How are you going to get up so early? Young man, you can't handle this kind of a job." Rod was devastated. He resigned his paper route before he even started, and the story was told 30 years later to the author. He said he never shared anything with his parents. He never asked their opinion or discussed decisions with them. One more negative example, and then we'll get to a couple positives. Sue's daughter Emily was 7 years old when her teacher praised her regularly for her good behavior. One day when Sue, the mother, went to the school to pick up Emily, her daughter, the teacher said, "Emily is so good, she could be a citizen of the month every month." The mother gasped, "Are we talking about the same child?" This is the power, the opportunity that these three people had, and look what they did to children. So let me read two positive examples. This story, I wish it was something my wife would say about me, but maybe someday. I'm a mother of two preschoolers and a wife of a busy U.S. Air Force officer. Not that part. It goes without saying how often have long, exhausting days. My husband periodically stops by the flower shop on the way home and buys flowers for me. Nothing fancy, just a daisy or two. With the flower comes the most precious thing, a card. These cards are not elaborate or expensive. In fact, they're the free ones the florist gives. But I treasure these cards, which range from saying, "I appreciate you," to "You're doing a great job with the kids," to "You're a precious wife." Sometimes they're funny cards. One day he gave me a get well card. I was shocked because I was feeling especially great that day, but I read on, "Get well prepared for a great life together." This woman keeps these cards in the kitchen, and if she's ever feeling a little bit down, she goes and reads these. This was the encouragement that this husband was offering to his wife. Last one. My teacher could have criticized my work, but instead she said, "I admire you because you work well under pressure." Ever since then, when the pressure mounts, I remember what she said, and it helps me give the strength to tackle the problem I am facing. Isn't it amazing that one simple sentence can have such an impact on a person's life? We have so many opportunities, we have so much power to help or to tear down. Let's look through a couple of examples in Acts. So we're going to see that the word exhort is used in some of these verses. Exhort is fairly equivalent to encourage, but it might even be strongly encouraged. So it's like encouragement up, one level up. We can see through the book of Acts as the church leaders, the apostles, traveled from congregation to congregation and visited people. There's this thread of encouragement that we can see, that the people were being encouraged. Acts 14:22 is where we'll begin. And we'll read three passages here in Acts. So Acts 14:22 is talking about Paul and Barnabas. It says, "Paul and Barnabas, strengthening the souls of the disciples, exhorting them to continue in the faith, saying, 'We must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of God.'" So here we see Paul and Barnabas encouraging the brethren and encouraging them about the kingdom of God. Moving ahead to the next chapter, let's look at Acts 15, and we'll look at verses 30 and 32. Of course, Acts 15 is the famous chapter that had to do with the circumcision and a few other related topics, and this letter was produced, and then a group of church leaders were sent off to take the letter to some of the churches. And it says, "So they," the group of men, "were sent off. They came to Antioch." This is verse 30. "And when they had gathered the multitude together, they delivered the letter." And then verse 31. And I think in verse 31, the they switch over to the brethren in Antioch, I believe. But it says, "When they read it, they rejoiced over its encouragement." So here we can see the brethren were being encouraged. And then verse 32. "Now Judas and Silas, themselves being prophets, also exhorted and strengthened the brethren with many words." So we can see the encouragement that is being delivered by this letter and also by Judas and Silas. This is where, I'm not sure exactly why, but the last two words of verse 32 kind of stood out to me, and I'm like, they exhorted with many words. I looked this up, I checked other translations. And in other translations, I thought it was quite interesting. It said that Judas and Silas encouraged them with a long message. Another example, Judas and Silas encouraged the brethren by speaking a long time. The last one I'll mention, I'm not going to say which one of these is more correct, but Judas and Silas encouraged the brethren by preaching long sermons. So, this is an example. This is a memory that's recorded for us. So if you want to be encouraged, you will appreciate long sermons. If you want to encourage the brethren and follow also the example, should you be taking on long sermons? Now, because you're only hearing this today, you know, I'm not going to put this into practice today. At least I'll try not to. But maybe next time. All right, the last verse here in this section, I want to turn to another. Flip ahead to Acts chapter 16, verse 40. Again, looking at this thread of encouragement that flows through the book of Acts. Now the brethren were being encouraged by the messages from the disciples, the apostles, the church leaders. Verse 40, it says, Paul entered the house of Lydia and encouraged the brethren. So Paul is traveling and encouraging them. I won't ask you to turn to these, but Acts 20, verse 2, Paul went through Macedonia and encouraged the brethren with many words. Acts 27, verse 36, this is an interesting place. This is where Paul was on the ship, and the ship was about to sink. Paul could have been spending his time worrying about his own life. Paul could have been spending his thoughts on how to survive, but what he did was he encouraged. He used his time to encourage others on the ship. So what are a few ways that we can encourage people? So one of the simplest ways is we can smile. A smile is encouraging, isn't it? That's and sharing a few words, just saying something pleasantries is a great way to encourage people. One of my team members just finished up 20 years at Panasonic, and so I asked him to prepare a short presentation to talk about his 20 years. So he talked about the projects he worked on, some of his activities, some of the people he worked with, and he finished the presentation and mentioned how he really liked living in Peachtree City. And I asked him, well, what is it that you like about it? And he said, I'm a runner, and when I'm running on the paths, people are so friendly to me. They say hello, and they encourage me. He said, they say, go runner, you can do it. And he really liked that. Now, this type of encouragement is good, and we should do this, but I would kind of look at this as a level one out of level, you know, five levels of encouragement. This is the beginning. Let's do that when we don't have much time, if it's a person we don't know. Apply this level one. Eventually, though, we need to get up to level five. We were reading that in Acts, what these apostles and church leaders were doing. Another way we can be encouraging is be optimistic. Certainly there are times to be sad, there are times to cry, but despite all these struggles, we have a hope inside of us, right? There's no reason for us to not have an overall optimistic and positive outlook. And if we can share that optimism and that positive attitude with others, that is very encouraging. And then another point I'll share here in terms of how we can be encouraging, and I'll call this a level three. So we have five levels. Started with level one, listen. Listen to others. Be there fully. Stop what you're doing. Pay attention. This is encouraging in a couple different ways. One, it shows the person you care. You're taking your time and focusing on them. That is an encouraging thing. But it's also important because if you're listening to people, you know how you can learn how they need to be encouraged. You can learn more about their situation so that your encouragement can be directed in the right way. You know what to say to them to help them. So again, listening is a great way to be encouraging. All right, I want to go through several examples of encouragement that we can find in the Bible. We'll talk about four people who encouraged others. And we'll start with Jonathan. So we know Jonathan, he was a son of Saul. And at some point, Jonathan becomes a friend of David, and not just a friend. 1 Samuel 18:1 says that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. Talk about best friends. That's amazing. So, and we know the story. Saul becomes angry enough to try to kill David. David, at this point, he's depressed. He's on the run. He's in a bad spot. So what does his good friend do? Well, let's look at what Jonathan did. 1 Samuel 23, verse 16. How did Jonathan help his good friend David? 1 Samuel 23, 16 says, Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods and strengthened him, which I have a footnote in my Bible that says encouraged him in the hand of God. So here David is being encouraged by his friend. And he specifically, it says that he's encouraging him in the hand of God. Some other translations said that Jonathan helped David grow stronger in the faith of God. Jonathan encouraged David to trust in God. This was the kind of encouragement that Jonathan did. This is an example that we should be following within our family, within this our church family, amongst our brethren. So again, a few more points on how to encourage and how to be an effective encourager. You know, if an encouraging thought comes to mind, share it immediately, because you may forget. Don't be shy. Share it. And if you do remember to share it after the fact, it is probably going to be less meaningful because the person's like, I did what? When? I don't remember what I did yesterday. So when the thought comes to you, if you can think of a way to encourage somebody, share that immediately. There was another book that I read, I'll refer to, that I thought was a good example of, again, showing how to be encouraging. The book's title is Whale Done. Now, it's a play on words, or play on a word, whale. This book title is about the name as the sea creature. But, of course, Whale Done is thinking about well done. It's written by Ken Blanchard. In this book, it's probably about a sixth grade reading level, so I was able to read it. Right in my wheelhouse. But the book is there's a manager. He's trying to figure out how to build up his team, how to have better teamwork. He goes to SeaWorld. It's a made up story. He goes to SeaWorld and he sees how the SeaWorld trainers are working with the orcas, and he's like, wow, I need to apply that back to my team. But anyway, so some of the points though that he saw and that's called out in the book is that first you build trust, then you accentuate the positive. And that's where you encourage somebody when you see them doing something right. Encourage that right then. Somebody's starting to take the right moves, they're making the right decisions, encourage them right there. When a mistake occurs, redirect the energy. So this point I think you need to use with wisdom. I think correction is absolutely important. But there are probably many times that, you know, moving on from the mistake might be the right choice. And then, I think this was mentioned, but encourage progress, even if it's small. And at one point in the book, it compares two things. And it asks the question, are you a gotcha person or are you a well-done person? So a gotcha person is somebody who catches people doing the wrong thing. Gotcha. A well-done person is somebody who catches you doing the right thing. Hey, good job. And so it asks the question, should you be a gotcha person or a well done person? And of course the idea in the book is we should be spending a lot more time as catching people doing the right thing and then encouraging them for that. So let's look at the next example. So who is the most famous person for encouragement in all of the Bible? Who comes to mind? Sure, it's the name Joseph, right? Wait a minute. Is that right? Well, let's look at Acts 4:36. I think this will jog your memory a little bit. This section I did get from an article, again, from Life, Hope, and Truth. It's Learning from Barnabas, the Son of Encouragement by Bill Palmer. So Acts chapter 36, we'll read 36 and 37. Here it says, and Joseph... Right, we know Joseph, very famous, right? We probably better know him as Barnabas, but his name was Joseph. He was also named Barnabas by the apostles, which is translated son of encouragement. He was a Levite from the country of Cyprus, and having land, sold it and bought it with money and laid it at the feet of the apostles. So Barnabas had built a reputation of encouraging others. And we can see in a few places in the New Testament where he put this into action. He put it into action with his words, but also with his example. You know, he set an encouraging example when he sold his land and donated it to the apostles and to the church. Let's look at Acts chapter 11, verse 23. Acts 11:23, and we'll read a few verses here in Acts chapter 11. And it says, when he, Barnabas, came and had seen the grace of God, he was glad and encouraged them all that with the purpose of heart that they should continue with the Lord. So Barnabas is encouraging, and he's specifically encouraging people to continue to follow God and to follow the Lord, as it has, says here. So Barnabas was a great encourager. He personally encouraged Paul in a few different ways. So when Paul was an outsider, Barnabas took Paul with him and brought him to the apostles and told the apostles, this guy has been converted. We can trust him. He is our brother. That must have been very encouraging from Paul, who was a feared outsider, at least at the beginning. In another place, it seems that Barnabas was an encourager of John Mark. So Paul was ready to cast John Mark aside, but Barnabas took him and said, John, you're coming with me. And he separated from Paul for a while. But if Barnabas had not done that, that would have left John Mark in a pretty bad spot, I suppose. But Barnabas stood up for him, encouraged him, and eventually we see that Paul praised John Mark and had good things to say about him later in his life. So Barnabas is an excellent example of somebody who is encouraging in his actions and in his words. So that brings us to the all-important question of, are you a sledgehammer or are you mortar? So think about a 3-foot-high brick wall. If you had a sledgehammer in your hand, what's that going to do to the brick wall? Well, it's going to tear it down. But if you're mortar and you come to the brick wall, you have a chance to build up. You can take that 3-foot-high brick wall and turn it into a 4-foot-high, 5-foot-high, 6-foot-high brick wall. So if we take an approach with our words to be mortar and to be something that's building up and encouraging and helping others, that is a much better approach. Sledgehammers are important tools. There are times when you want to use a sledgehammer, but I think way more often we should be thinking about being mortar and building up, helping others. As somebody is trying to work on something, apply a layer of mortar to allow them to put the next brick on their wall. The question of the author of the book I was referring to at the beginning, their family used the question, is it edifying? In your words, if you want something more colorful, think about what you're about to say or what you did say in terms of, was that being a sledgehammer or mortar? So maybe a more colorful way to consider that. Just offer that out if you want. Considering a few more ways to be encouraging. One thing that's important is to be specific with your encouragement. You know, tell people how they helped. You know, doing this makes the encouragement more beneficial. If you say, you did a great job and stopped there, that's probably helpful. But if you told somebody, maybe there's a boss or higher up manager that sees you once a week and says, great job, great job. You know, after the third, fourth time, you're going to be like, this guy doesn't even know what I'm doing. This is meaningless. But if you can take the time and say, great job at, and then fill in the blank, say, this is what I saw, this is what you did well. That is such a more meaningful way. You know, I really appreciated that you did fill in the blank. This can make the encouragement that we are trying to give or that we are giving to be much more impactful. So I suggest that you be specific with your encouragement. Let's look at Paul. We've talked a little bit about Paul already, but let's consider him. So Paul wrote a lot about encouragement, and he encouraged many, but he was also someone who needed to be encouraged. And he took encouragement from his fellow workers and fellow Christians. You know, this might be a little bit of an interesting twist on this encouragement topic. So Paul, what was he encouraged by? He was encouraged by others doing right. You know, it wasn't necessarily about others telling him, wow, that was a great sermon, or wow, that letter was really good. What's written in the Bible about Paul is that he was encouraged when he saw other people doing right. So when we think about us on the receiving end of encouragement, you know, we should be looking at the right kind of encouragement and receiving it in the right way. It's one of the things I didn't particularly like about this book, Silver Boxes, and the author kind of admits to it, but she loved having people tell her what a great seminar. She loved doing something for others, but only if they talked about her, if they came back to her and say, thank you so much for what you did, that was so great. She needed that feedback. But, you know, maybe it's at least what we have recorded, that's not the way it was with Paul. He was encouraged by people following God's way. Paul also left us with some really good instructions on encouragement. So let's look at a couple verses. In Romans chapter 15, we'll read verse 2 and then verse 5 in Romans chapter 15. And we'll look at the instructions that Paul gave us with respect to encouragement. Romans 15:2, each of us should please our neighbors for their good to build them up. So again, here's this concept of building up. We can use our opportunities, we can use our power, we can use our words to build people up and encourage other people so they can keep growing in the right direction. And then in verse 5, just dropping down, may the God who gives endurance and encouragement give you the same attitude of mind toward each other that Christ Jesus had. So here we see that God gives us encouragement. And of course, we know that's absolutely true. But we should know that. And we are reflecting God's character. So we need to take that and turn around and be encouraging to others. We need to learn from God's example and from God's character and pass that encouragement along. Again, considering ways, you know, looking for opportunities to encourage others. When you're introducing somebody to another person, that's a great opportunity to encourage them by highlighting their strengths or achievements. Paul seemed to be a master at this. I just pulled out a few segments from Colossians chapter 4. There's other places, other letters where we could have turned to, but Colossians chapter 4, this is what Paul is writing to the brethren in Colossia about some people. Tychicus, a beloved brother and faithful minister. So this is a letter that he's writing that's going to be shared publicly. And these men, these people he's writing about, how encouraging it must have been for them to say, wow, I must be doing the right thing. I'm going to keep doing the right thing. So again, Tychicus, a beloved brother, faithful minister, and fellow servant in the Lord. Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner. Epaphras, a bondservant of Christ. Luke, the beloved physician. So Paul was encouraging these men when he was introducing them to others. We can learn from that and try to do the same thing when we have an opportunity. At this point, if the ushers would pass out the cards. Another way that we can encourage others, and I think as a whole, our church is probably really good at this, but sending a note or a card to somebody, taking the time to write something, is a great way to encourage people. And the ushers are going to be passing a card out to each of you, giving you an opportunity to try this. I know that many of you do this already. Maybe some of you have already written a card today. But I'm just trying to make an easy opportunity to give everyone a chance. Do you ever get stumped, though, when you have to write in a card? I do. To be honest, especially if it's a sympathy card. But if it's a card of congratulations or a thank you card that's being passed around, I get a little anxious. My blood pressure probably goes up a little bit. Like, what do I write? I don't know what to write. I look for my wife and I hide behind her. But taking the time to consider and write something meaningful may not be easy, but it's important and it's helpful. But there is help. And in fact, Hallmark.com will help you. Now, of course, they're going to help you by selling you a $5 card. They'll be happy to help you like that. But they actually have an article on their website that talks about it or gives you some ideas on what to write in a card. And honestly, I think it could be helpful. Not that you just want to copy something, but just to get your mind started and give you some ideas, There is literal quotes you can pull from this article. And I do, if you are ever stuck, I think it's, you know, it could be a source that you could look at that you can find on Hallmark.com. But it says things like, you know, if you're trying to figure out what to write about, here's an example. You're never far from my thoughts. I can't wait to catch up with you soon. You'll be on my mind as you readjust and figure out next steps. No wise words of advice here, just me. Thinking of you, hoping of you. I believe in you and unicorns, but mostly you. If you need somebody to run errands, do house chores, cook, whatever, I'm a somebody. So, again, knowing what to write in a card may not be easy. For some, it's probably natural and easy, and you're like, oh, yeah, I can pen off a great card in any second. But, you know, it does take some effort. Practice is helpful. I'll get to that here in a minute. All right, last example. How did Jesus encourage the people of his time and still the people, and still us throughout the ages to us today? How did Jesus encourage? Let's look at three passages where Jesus, well, he was encouraging all throughout the Gospels. But let's start in Matthew chapter 11, and we'll read verses 28 through 30. This is such encouragement that Jesus gave to us. Matthew 11, 28. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and lean on me, and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light. But how encouraging is that? This is the kind of message, this is where we get to that level 5 encouragement. This is the kind of encouragement that we should be passing along between each of us as we are struggling on our Christian walk. This is also, I think, in this case, it's a good example of how we can interact with our children. You know, we cannot do the same level of taking the burden from our children as what Christ can do for us. But we can take that burden off of our children. Children can come to us. So again, as a parent, I think this is a great verse to think about how to put it into practice with our child. Matthew 19, verse 26. Matthew 19, 26. But Jesus looked at them and said, with men this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. This is probably a saying that you'll find on coffee mugs around and on cards in many, many places. But how encouraging is this, that God makes everything possible. And finally, John chapter 14, and we'll read verses 1 through 2. John 14, 1 and 2. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions, and if it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. God is preparing a place for us. That is the ultimate level of encouragement, knowing what God is doing for us and what he has prepared for us. What an exciting time. So let me just share two or three more ideas on how we can be encouraging to others. Let people know you're praying for them. I think we do this all the time. Let's keep doing this. But, you know, tell them, again, being specific, what are you praying about? That helps the person to know that you really have taken the time to get to know them and to know what they need. Practice. I mentioned this briefly, but it may not be easy to say encouraging words. So practice it. You know, start with the pleasantries, but move on to that more deeper encouragement that we need to be getting to. And then finally, you know, again, we should be in this level 5 encouragement. We should be encouraging others in the faith and hope we have in Christ. This is the encouragement that we read about with Jonathan, with Peter and John, Paul, Barnabas. That's the type of encouragement they gave. That's the type of encouragement that Jesus gave to us in the Gospels. This is the type of encouragement that gives lasting results. This is what we should be doing as we are working with each other. All right, so let's recap. So what did we learn? We learned that we should be mortar way more often than a sledgehammer. I think we learned that long sermons are encouraging. But hopefully more importantly, we learned and saw, it's probably not even learning, but we were reminded about encouragement and how we should be encouraging each other by smiling, by being optimistic, but by being specific, encouraging progress wherever it's possible, and ultimately encouraging people, encouraging us, each other, our brothers and sisters, to be encouraged in the faith and hope of Christ. Let's close with Hebrews chapter 10. We began in Hebrews, we'll end in Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25. And let us consider one another in order to stir up the love and good works, not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together as the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as we see the day approaching. Let's continue to be encouraging to each other.